a hearing and work session on Senate Bill 5608. That's the fee bill. We're going to start with the fee bill, then we'll go over to the Department of Agriculture's budget, and we'll follow that in about 10 minutes. He said jokingly, Senate Bill 740. The fact is, we won't get to it that fast, so people kind of relax. I'm supposed to be another meeting at 2 o'clock, which I'm not going to be able to attend. I expect we're not going to be done by then, so people understand that from the beginning. We'll do the fee bill first, as I said. We'll do 5607 after that. We are potentially looking at a budget note that may or may not be inserted into 5607. That's why we're doing the fee bill first. So we'll see what happens from that point. And I will ask LFO to lead us through the fee bill.
Mr. Chair, you should have at your place a packet of information, including a few pages with a fiscal impact statement on top. The fiscal impact statement is Senate Bill 5608, which is the fee bill or the fee ratification bill for the Department of Agriculture. ORS 291.055 requires all new state agency fees or fee increases adopted after July 1 of any odd-numbered year to be rescinded on July 1 unless authorized by enabling legislation setting forth the approved fees. Again, this is why it's the fee ratification bill. The department went through rulemaking to increase fees in a number of programs, including the fertilizer program, the livestock brand inspection program, the nursery program, and the animal health program. All these fee changes are anticipated to increase revenue by approximately $1.7 million during the current biennium, and this revenue should remain at a similar level in 05-07. The department, I would note, developed all these fee modifications through work groups and stakeholder meetings before initiating the rule changes, and the budget that you are about to consider assumes continuation of all the revenue included in this fee ratification bill. The first page shows the SMS. You'll see the dash one amendments for 5608 are the next two pages. This is the fee ratification bill as it was shown in the original bill with one slight modification. One fee was left out in the original draft. But since we are inserting that, the fee ratification bill into a new bill, Senate Bill 5608, those changes are incorporated in the dash one amendments. I would just note that that is in section one, number three, annual nursery participation fee of $200. Other than that, Mr. Chair, that is it for the LFO recommendation. We would recommend that you adopt the dash one amendments and report the bill due pass to the full committee with amendments.
Paul, does this bill any significant difference with the House passed this morning?
Mr. Chair, this has absolutely no difference from what the House passed this morning.
Does the department want to have any comment on this bill? Thumbs up is not quite going to work for us. Would you step up, identify yourself, and say no or yes as you think appropriate?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Katie Koba, Director of the Department of Agriculture. The department supports the bill and the amendments.
Thank you, Katie. I would entertain a motion to pass 608 as stated by LFO. This is the same bill that the House has sent out this morning.
I'll move that.
Thank you. Hear motion. Hearing any objection?
Isn't there discussion before you go to objection?
Sorry. I'm worried about 2 o'clock. I can stop worrying.
Oh, please go. Under discussion, I was just going to say I was a little sheepish about Section 2.
Okay. That's why we don't have a lot of discussion sometimes around
that's,
here.
That's my brand of humor.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I understand.
That. It was
just, you know.
Okay.
Let's have a roll call, so we can.
I'm a no.
Hope I don't have it here. Aye. Pink.
Aye. Bill passes, and we'll report it out as a due pass to the Senate Special Committee. To be reviewed probably on Friday?
Mr. Chair, I believe this will be going on the full in the next week.
Next week, okay. Close the work session on 5608 and would like to open the work session on Senate Bill 607. And Paul, could you lead us through that again?
Mr. Chair, at your place, you have another packet of information dated June 14th, the LFO memo. I would just point out that I ask that you use this information that is at your place as the information that was delivered earlier with the cover memo June 10th has changed. So we'll be using the information with the June 14th date. These are the LFO recommendations to Senate Bill 5607, which is the Department of Agriculture budget bill. First, I would walk you through, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the performance measures. You'll see a copy of the LFO recommended changes to the performance measures. There are a number of changes in this department's performance measures, probably the most you will see of any agency, at least that that I work with, Mr. Chair. The subcommittee spent significant time going over the performance measures in both Phase 1 and Phase 2 of the public hearings for this department, and the changes you see, I believe, reflect those discussions. There was some indication last session, and again earlier this session, about the number of measures that the department had. Therefore, the department brought forward a proposal to delete a number of measures as key performance measures, but to keep them internally. And you'll see those noted on the far right column of this form, Legislatively Adopted Performance Measures 2005-2007. I would note that there are a couple of additions. One is performance measurement number 10, number of plant species not listed in Oregon where department activities play a role in the decision. Also added is are a number of economic development-related performance measures that would examine the outcomes of the agriculture marketing and development program. These were added and requested to be added by the department at the behest of the committee last session, which felt their performance measures were somewhat lacking in this area of measuring the outcomes of the agricultural marketing program. You'll see those, I believe, start number 26, number 27, number 28, and number 29. Number 30 is a measure that the department added on, requested to add on smoke intrusions, which is a better measure than one that is being deleted. And there is also a water quality measure, actually it's not numbered, it's right after measure 30. Percentage of monitored stream sites associated with predominantly agricultural use. Again, this was added at the request of the subcommittee. And finally, two measures for customer service are added. These are the same measures that are being added to all department performance measurements.
Paul, my remembrance of this and what we discussed is this was pretty well a consensus as far as the performance measure of concern between the House and the Senate. Is there a significant difference between them?
Mr. Chair, no, there's no differences. I would point out that there was some discussion this morning centered around measure number 12, which is percent of commercial pesticide operators complying with the pesticide use reporting system requirements. This measure is being recommended for deletion at this time. With the understanding that the future of the system is certainly still in doubt, could absolutely become operational during the next biennium, but the department has made the commitment to track compliance, and we'll revisit this performance measure and the possible need for a performance measure if such a system is implemented during the biennium, and the department will bring forward that information as well as a new performance measure next biennium.
Thank you, Paul. Any discussion? We still have a quorum.
Okay.
This could be a tough vote now here. Careful. Okay. I would entertain a motion to accept the performance measures as listed.
I would so move, Mr. Chair.
Hearing no objection, we will move the performance measures as being accepted. Okay.
Mr. Chair, item B, adjustments to governor's recommended budget. I will turn your attention to the work session action report labeled Senate Budget Version for the Department of Agriculture. This report is dated June 14th. And I would start, Mr. Chair, on page 4, which begins the recommendations for the administration and support services policy area. Mr. Chair, would you like me to go through all the packages?
I think that this case will probably have to And I'll walk quickly through the packages. There are some significant differences here, and I don't see a way around that. So I'll just walk through and we'll outline the differences between the House and the Senate and move forward. And I'm going to invite testimony also from the department. I know there's some issues they're concerned about and want to get on the record for it. And so I'd ask the department agency had to step up now. Katie, I'm going to ask you to indicate to us when you want to have a discussion, because I know there's a policy package here you're concerned about. We'll have that discussion and get on the record for you.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay?
Chair.
Go ahead, Paul.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, package 090 is an analyst adjustment package that makes the smart buy reductions you've seen in all the budgets the governor recommended, as well as eliminating two positions and other fund limitation to create a sufficient ending balance in the admin and support services program. Package 303 is part of the PARC pesticide use reporting system and consumer education package. This particular piece adds three information technology positions into the admin support services program to implement and maintain the pesticide use reporting system. LFO is recommending approval of this package to carry out the Senate budget plan, and we're recommending approval as modified with the lower PERS rates, and that is the public employee retirement system rates.
Be perfectly clear, this is the PERS reporting system.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. This is the pesticide use reporting system. These are three technical IT positions that are necessary to create and maintain the program. There is a complementary package later in the natural resources policy area.
It complements this package. And this package does not specifically lay out the specifics and how that would be implemented.
Mr. Chair, I believe that there are already existing administrative rules and statutes that dictate how the system would operate.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Package 801, LFO Analyst Adjustments. This is the package you'll see in every policy area that makes the standard adjustments to reflect the lower public employee retirement system rate and attorney general rates. And then package 803 is a package used for vacancy savings. This package eliminates a vacant position that had been used to fund internal auditing functions within admin services. The package would eliminate the general fund support for the vacant position, move the personal services to services, supplies, professional services, and make sure that there is a total of $50,000 of other funds for use for supporting the internal auditing functions of the department. Mr. Chair, that's it for admin services policy area.
Is food safety then?
Food safety policy area.
This is going to take longer than I thought, too. You want to go to those areas where we have controversy and leave out the four-quarter plate?
Mr. Chair, I'll just quickly go through the packages and our LFO recommendation just to get that on the record.
Good.
Package 070, revenue shortfalls. LFO is recommending approval of this package. Package 090, analyst adjustments. LFO is recommending approval of this package. Package 200, food safety, general fund restoration. The governor's budget added general fund and other funds to restore 25 positions eliminated in package 070. The general fund was added with $657,384,000, and the other funds are from a fee increase that the department would have to implement. The LFO is recommending approval of the package as modified to carry out the Senate budget plan, which adds an additional $427,394 of general fund and $121,651 of other funds to the governor's recommended budget, restores five positions eliminated in package 070, but then eliminates three different positions that are currently vacant. The elimination of these positions will impact the operation of the program, which I'm sure the director will be happy to tell you about. The package assumes a fee increase, and the fee increase assumed in this package is similar to the fee proposal the department had brought forward, which would increase the statutory caps from $750 to $1,500. The vehicle for that would be the House bill that just passed out this morning, The idea being that when the bill comes before this committee, they would have an opportunity to amend that bill to reflect the department's proposal for fee increases. The bill, in its current form, that's going before the House full committee, implements a different fee structure in which each sector of the industry has its own fee structure in statute, as well as each category of gross annual sales. This package will require a fee increase of about 65%.
Committee, this is actually two issues involved in this. One issue is whether or not we put more or not put more general fund into this program, because that directly affects what those fee amounts are. The second piece of it is what the matrix those fees go on. The push and shove on that is that it's a situation in which we want to discuss whether or not most of those fees go to the mom-and-pop stores, the big stores. Big stores would argue that the department spends less time with them, and therefore the burden of that cost should be pushed down to another area. Knowing also these fees have not been changed, I don't believe, since 1987, is my memory on it. So there's two different issues here. A amount of general fund flowing into the program and how those fees are applied. Would the agency, I'd like to make a comment on this at this point.
Please, I would, Mr. Chair. For the record, Katie Koba, Director of the Department of Agriculture. In the interest of time, I will try to do a very quick summary of complex history on this issue. And you are correct, Mr. Chair. The two major issues are the amount of general fund that's put back into this program, which then drives the fee levels necessary to operate the program. But in addition, I need to share with you some concerns I have about eliminating the three positions that are included in the recommendation. We've been working on this issue for quite some time, and about a year and a half ago, after coming to last legislative session and working with legislative fiscal office staff, had some concerns about our ability to make it through this current biennium with the revenue that we were projecting. We were told to go ahead and do the best we could and stay in close touch with the fiscal analyst, which we did. We realized a little over a year ago that we probably would not be able to make it through the current biennium based on the revenue that we had coming in, and we moved forward with rulemaking to do a two-phase fee increase. The first phase would increase those firms that still had room under our statutory cap up to generate enough revenue to get through this current biennium, and then we would be coming to the legislature asking for a cap increase and going back and raising fees for those who had been at the cap to continue the operation of the program into 05-07. During the course of that exercise, very strong concerns from the fee payers, especially the small folks who saw their fees going up, but the large folks' fees were not going up because they were at the cap, and concern in general from the industry about trying to get two fee increases through in about a year's period of time. So we met a group of us with the speaker and then Representative Dan Doyle before you as a summary, my summary of that meeting, which I had sent out after the meeting, and I wanted to go through the bottom proposed action items. First of all, making clear that the industry has been very supportive of this program, and this is the agency's number one priority program, maintaining the public health of the consuming public in terms of the food that they eat. Through the course of the budget crunches, general fund was taken out of this program. I don't think the extent of that was fully realized by the industry until we had to move to increase fees to make up for that loss of general fund, and the fee increase was a dramatic fee increase. The industry felt strongly that general fund should be restored to the program and was going to approach the legislature this session to do so, and then the two-step fee increase, which I already spoke about. We spent a significant amount of time with the industry in the last year going over the program, the costs, the fee structure. They have a proposal that they brought forward in terms of the fee structure that they'd like to see to support the program, but we made a commitment at that time to do that. We also talked about some of the critical timing issues and the fact that to meet our deadline of mailing out renewals, because we send those out effective July 1, to change through rulemaking we need to do in April and May. We needed a decision from the legislature in March so that we knew what our fees were going to be. And everyone's committed to that, but obviously we were not successful in that effort because we don't yet know what the fees are going to be. Again, what we have done now is gone ahead and sent out the renewals with a notice to the industry that once we know what the fee changes will be, we will send out a supplemental notice for any fee increase they need to pay or if they get a refund because of change in the fee structure. The other thing we talked about was finding as many savings as possible to get through this current biennium with the existing revenue. We had three positions that were vacant. We committed to keeping those positions vacant, and we took a number of other steps and measures in order to get through the biennium with the revenue that we had. We had talked about our concern of coming into the legislature with three vacant positions and those positions being taken. Unfortunately, that's where we're at now. And I need to share with you, with the loss of those positions, what it means in terms of program impact. First of all, two programs in the dairy industry, dairy water sampling and the milk tanker inspection and sampling, greater inspections will now be transferred to the industry, and we will merely perform an audit function to make sure that the industry is indeed conducting those sampling and testing itself. We will need to obviously do some training for the industry to do that. We will be taking our dairy farm inspections from three inspections a year down to two inspections a year, which is the federal minimum in terms of maintaining interstate ship milk compliance. Hopefully the Food and Drug Administration will accept that. We may get some pushback on that. We will need to eliminate one staff conference a year. Our staff in this program work out of their homes. They're stationed around the state. We bring staff in a couple of three times a year for training and connecting with them. We will have to eliminate one of those conferences, and we will decrease our regional mini conferences from 10 per year to 4 per year. And finally, each of our field inspectors will see a 12% increase in their assigned firms. That averages out to about 40 additional firms per person. Our goal is to conduct two inspections a year. We are not meeting that goal right now, and it's unlikely that we will be able to meet that goal in the coming biennium. In addition, the quality of our inspections, I fear, deteriorates a bit. We cannot spend as much time in each facility that we're inspecting and monitoring their food safety practices as we can with a full staffing level. So I felt, Mr. Chair and members, that I needed to share that piece of the proposal with you.
Thank you, Katie. I appreciate your testimony. I believe I asked you a couple days ago if you could give us some idea of the mixture of general fund money versus fee money generated in 1987, the last time we changed this, to get a picture of this. Were you able to do that? Some historical context of it.
Mr. Chairman, in 1987, our approximate general fund, other fund split was about 35% general fund to 65% other fund. 87, did I say 97? In 1987, excuse me. And this current biennium, we are at 5% general fund support, 95% fee support. Now, the governor's budget and various proposals in the House and Senate budget would obviously shift that back to more percentage in terms of general fund.
Appreciate your comments and your testimony today. As we all know, these budgets are not final budgets. Unfortunately, with the split of ways and means, we're sending budgets out in a very different way than we normally do. This will still be up for discussion. However, I want you to be aware we are going to move this budget forward as it's stated here, but we've been carefully heard today. And your comments will be part of our discussion for any final solution to the budget for the Department of Agriculture.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Want to keep going then?
Mr. Chair.
I would add one more thing. I assume that this our present proposal here is significantly different than the House proposal.
Mr. Chair, about the only thing that the two versions agree on is the size of the program.
Okay.
The funding mix and the way that the other funds are generated are different in the two proposals.
Okay. Any questions here?
Just a comment to see if I'm on the same page as you are, Mr. Chair. We're looking at this in the context of all the rest of the state's budgets, things all over the place having been cut. And I've had a kind of a harsh way of saying it, but in a lot of arenas, I don't think Oregon's been willing to pay for a civilized society. I mean, you start not doing the number of inspections that you ought to be doing and so on. That's part of this big, huge thing, whether it's K through 12 education, human services, now in this arena. Every arena is getting hit. And I'm not sure it's fair for any one arena to get hit any harder than any other. I feel bad about the inadequacy of the entire budget across the waterfront.
And I would share those feelings, and I think that the director's position here is well taken, and one we have to talk about a great deal. We have two issues here we have to deal with. We do agree on the overall amount. The question is how we reach that amount as far as fees are concerned and how those fees are applied. I have a general feeling that I would probably follow the department's lead as far as how they're applied, and the other part would be open for discussion. But at this moment, we're going to pass it out as it is. And I would hope that stay very closely involved in the discussions on how this actually ends up as far as two budgets are concerned. We'll need some guidance from you at times, and I look forward to your expertise in helping us with these decisions.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Package 202, Food Animal Tracking System. Adds a position and federal funds limitation to develop development of a national system to investigate animal diseases. This is an outgrowth of the BSE or mad cow outbreak that occurred earlier this biennium. Package 205, bioterrorism coordinator, funds a position to act as a bioterrorism response coordinator, working primarily to look at preparedness for potential attacks on the state's food supply. Package 801, LFO analyst adjustments, make the standard adjustments to PERS and attorney general rate. Package 810, additional ways and means adjustments, makes two changes. It adds $75,000 of other funds to the shellfish testing program to increase the frequency of tests. This $75,000 comes from ODF&W, which is generated through recreational shellfish license fees. Additionally, the package adds $55,000 of general fund to the weight program to test package weights to ensure proper weights. There was significant discussion around problems with this issue during subcommittee hearings, and particularly the performance measurement trend showing increasing number of packages being sold that are underweight. I would note that this package reduces other funds' personal services by the same amount, so the net effect is $20,000 of additional other funds and $55,000 of general fund. Package 811, Special Budget Committee Adjustments. This restores three laboratory service positions that were limited in GRB because of revenue issues. Instead, these positions would be expected to be funded from the Export Services Program, and they would be used to ensure there's adequate capacity to test agricultural products being exported. Package 812, Special Budget Committee Adjustment Number 2. This is a Senate prioritized reduction that eliminates general fund support for the Predator Control Program, which is passed through to the federal USDA Wildlife Services. LFO is recommending approval of this package to carry out the Senate budget plan.
I understand this is a difference from the House plan again?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay.
Going to page 10, Natural Resources Policy Area. Package 090 makes a number of general fund reductions and fund shifts. I would just point out that the package as recommended as modified would deny the shifts of supporting Oregon plan SAM recovery activities from general fund to Pacific Coast SAM recovery federal funds in the agricultural water quality program due to concerns over NOAA fisheries. about the use of these funds. You'll see a package later that addresses this issue further. This reverses that fund shift. Package 301, sudden OPDEF positions, adds two positions that we've made permanent to deal with sudden OPDEF activities. These were begun last biennium as limited duration. LFOs recommend approval as modified with the PERS adjustments. Package 302, threatened and endangered plant funding. During special sessions, the general fund for this program was removed. Instead, federal funds limitation was given and direction was given for the department to seek federal funds to fund the program. They were unable to. The governor's budget adds the general fund back into the program. LFO is recommending that this be switched to Measure 66 lottery funds, and the specific split you'll see there, $78,774 of Measure 66 operations lottery funds and $162,283 of Measure 66 capital funds. And this includes the PERS and AG rate adjustments. That's why you'll see the general fund reduction is larger than what is added back in the lottery funds. And again, this would be to make general fund available to statewide issues. Package 303 is the companion piece of the pest use reporting system. It also adds $142,946 of general fund to establish a program to educate consumers safe use of pesticides and fertilizers, and adds $297,415 of general fund to restore funding for the Pesticide Analytical Response Center. This funding was cut during special sessions. The reduction was continued last session. LFO is recommending approval with the modifications for the PERS and Attorney General rate changes.
You may want to stop just for a moment. Any comments here from the committee?
I have lots.
this is something that's going to be probably the most difficult part of this budget. We have strong feelings on both sides. People saying we're not going to go home without this as part of the budget. Some are saying the budget doesn't go out within it. I still feel there's room for both sides to come to an agreement on this. Those discussions are continuing but have not reached any resolution yet. Any suggestions by these committee members to help us reach a resolution, those would be greatly appreciated at this moment.
Or at a subsequent moment when we're...
at any time.
Okay.
I understand this is under very significant discussions right now.
I will talk to you afterwards. I do have a suggestion.
Thank you. We will continue on with LFO's footwork on us.
Package 801 is LFO analyst adjustments makes standard adjustments to reflect lower public employee retirement system rates and attorney general rates. And package 802 deals with some technical adjustments. In package 090, there was an error made in the governor's recommended budget that overcut the insect pest prevention program. This package would restore that funding using Measure 66 operations. It also removes $500,000 of other funds limitation for 309 non-point source grants that DEQ had in their budget. And they don't have the revenue for these grants. Grants come from the Environmental Protection Agency through the Department of Environmental Quality. If such grants are available during the biennium, the agency has the ability to seek additional limitation from the emergency board if so needed. And the third component is package makes a technical adjustment to add carry forward limitation for the weed control grants that were made this biennium, but that will not be expended until the next biennium. I believe that's around $220,000 of additional limitation for carry forward. 803 vacancy savings eliminates 8 vacant positions, along with 3.2 FTE, federal funds and other funds limitation. Package 810, additional ways and means adjustments. This is the package I was referring to earlier that makes a number of shifts using Measure 66 and Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery. I'd like to just walk through these for the record, Mr. Chair. It shifts $2,244,775 of general fund support for implementation of agricultural water quality plans to Measure 66 operations lottery funds. Also shifts $900,000 of general fund support for the confined animal feeding operations program to Measure 66 operations lottery funds. It shifts $1,602,239 of general fund support that goes to soil and water conservation districts for administrative and local management agency grants and moves that to Measure 66 operations lottery funds. It then shifts $1,820,865 of Measure 66 operations lottery funds that's in the department's base budget for technical service grants to soil and water conservation districts that are necessary to build local capacity to implement projects in support of SAM and the steelhead recovery in areas where the fish are listed as threatened and endangered. This instead would be shifted onto Pacific Coastal SAM recovery funds, which show up as other funds in this package that the department would receive from OWEB. Again, Mr. Chair, this is part of the comprehensive package to deal with concerns that NOAA Fisheries has expressed about the governor's proposed use of the Pacific Coastal SAM recovery funds.
Thank you, Paul. I point out again, and I'll keep doing this as we go through the budgets, Paul, you did a great job of putting that together along with the other agencies, and that we have initial response to the federal government that's very positive on this, and we expect a memo this week or next stating that they were basically in compliance with what they're asking us to do. So thank you for your good work.
Mr. Chair, package 812, Senate Budget Committee Adjustment Number 2. This package would add limitation of $358,000 federal funds, the text of which is on page 14. You'll see the text for the package. There's a lot of text here. There's a lot of description of this grant. This is for a federal grant from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services to purchase 5.7 acres in what's commonly referred to as Jacksonville Woods in the city of Jacksonville. This grant was brought forward by the department to the November 2004 Emergency Board. The grant was never heard. The Senate budget plan has limitation being added and approval for this grant being given. For the department to seek this money. Actually, the project itself has been approved already by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. The department needs to send in a letter requesting the funding. They have until the end of the federal fiscal year to do so.
I would add in this that there seems to be agreement on both sides that this is a reasonable purchase. This land is basically square woke. It's not much value for anything other than a single home site or to complete the green belt around Jacksonville. The question really is how we fund it. This is federal money that's available for this because of endangered species on the property. And what I would recommend using instead of state money, such as about Measure 66 money, which has been suggested. So at this time, this is what we're placing in a policy package. If you have questions, now is a good time to ask those so we can understand the issue better.
I can't help but see similarity between this and other initiatives that have been stopped.
Okay.
But I won't say more than that.
Paul, you can go forward.
Mr. Chair, page 16 of 21 begins the recommendations for the Agriculture Development Policy Area. Package 070 is a revenue reduction package. Package 090, analyst recommendations. I'll go over this just briefly because it eliminates a number of positions, 38 seasonal positions and only 11.1 FTE, along with S&S and the Commodity Inspection Program, and makes smart buy reductions. You'll see some packages later that also address the same issue. Package 400, Agriculture Development Marketing Department Compliance Certification Package. The governor's recommended budget had $698,597 of general fund being added to the Ag Development Policy Area for technical assistance with industry regarding various certification programs and one position to work with renewable energy initiatives. The Senate budget plan, as well as the House budget plan, does not include any funding for this initiative. Therefore, LFO is recommending denial of this package.
We'd like to pause here for a moment. I'll hear from the agency head on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very briefly, I just wanted to take a moment to point out that this package really deals with two areas that we think are huge opportunities for the industry. In terms of their ability to continue to compete in the global marketplace as well as take advantage of new opportunities related to renewable energy. I certainly understand with the controversy around pesticide use reporting system and differences of opinion in terms of funding levels for the food safety program that this package is basically fallen by the wayside. But I still continue to believe that the certification opportunities for the industry are huge, and we've got to figure out some way to be involved in those efforts, as well as renewable energy. The State of Washington Department of Agriculture just filled two full-time positions that are working on renewable energy, and we are limping by with a person who works for me as a special assistant does a number of projects and is trying to pick up renewable energy stuff as much as he can.
Thank you for your testimony. I share some of your concerns here. I know neither side has really funded this at this time, and maybe we can't in this budget cycle, but it's something we do not want to lose sight of. I'm most concerned about Brand Oregon type of legislation, or I shouldn't say legislation, a promotion. And we are a global market, and I think that we have something special to offer from Oregon, and we are not doing that. So I'm also concerned about the other part of this package. That said, I'll take comments from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just thinking, doesn't this package relate back to some of your performance measures? Since there's so many of them here, I'm not sure I understand them all. But it seems to me that here we are, we're saying we want these performance measures from you, but we're going to take away your ability to actually perform.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, this would be an enhancement to our programs. We do have people that work with marketing efforts in the domestic and international market. We just feel this is such a critical area and wanted to take the chance to justify additional positions to work in that area.
It's something I think we're having a difficult time with now, but I want to continue this conversation. I can see a match program potentially with the industry, some support from our side, some from their side. This is, I think, something that has probably more value than we've given it credit for. And I think Senator Nelson's point is well made. I'm concerned about marketing for us.
Mr. Chair?
Move forward.
Package 801, LFO analyst adjustments. Make standard adjustments to reflect a lower PERS rate and attorney general rates. Also point out that there's a notation in here that's necessary for tracking that would reduce the amount of revenue being transferred in to the department. This is lottery fund revenue for operations of the County Fair Commission to reduce it by $21,000. The amount of limitation remains at $34,000 of lottery funds, but we would be directing the department to spend down an ending balance of approximately $21,000 over the course of the biennium, making that $21,000 less in transfer available for other economic development needs. Package 803, vacancy savings, and Package 811, special budget committee adjustments are related. The 803 eliminates four vacant positions and would allow the department to add the FTE and the other funds limitation to other positions in the shipping point inspection program. Package 811 restores FTE and other fund limitation, eliminated GRB for the shipping point inspection program. Specifically, it adds 14.66 FTE and $1,250,252 of other funds limitation to the existing positions. And this is necessary because of a fundamental change in the way the department operates the program. Previously, they had seasonal positions that would work maybe a month or a few months, a biennium. Inspecting products and commodities as they came off the line. The department now trains inspectors for each of the companies or the operations employees and then audits their activities or their performance as inspectors, much like the director was describing they would be moving towards in the food safety program with the dairy inspections. The problem that the department's having is the budget still is lined up the way the program used to operate, not the way the program operates now. So this package would right-size the budget and allow the agency to operate the program in an effective manner. Mr. Chair, then package... actually, that is the last recommended policy package. ILFO is recommending approval of both those policy packages. The last few pages, there's nothing on. Special programs is a policy area that's going away, and the other two, one for debt service. This department has no debt service. The other one is just a suspense account.
Thank you, Paul. I think we can probably take one motion to cover all these policy packages. I would entertain that motion.
So moved.
I think we better have a roll call vote in this one also.
Just a discussion.
Yes.
I mean, this is sort of, there's a trend going on, as everybody knows. We're not fooling anybody. I mean, we had the same issues with the Water Resource Department where we think we're cutting out all those things. I understand the politics of what we have to do, but I don't have to like it. And don't have to agree with it. Game management, the predator control issue, I think we didn't, you know, we passed over that, but that's, you know, that's a big issue from my standpoint. Of course, per on the Pesticide Use Reporting Act, I just, the evidence that I heard, at least in committee, was such that we don't have as great a problem there as we really think we do. And whatever that is. And then the third thing is attorney's fees. And I always bring this up. You know, it says that they're changing the attorney general's fees from $119 to $111 per hour. But really, in this session or in this biennium, we're paying $98. Is that right, Paul?
Mr. Chair, I think that's right.
$98. So really, we're giving them a 12% increase. And so I'm starting to get this idea that okay, we're paying these attorneys a 12% increase, but we're not willing to get a 12% increase to education or any of these things of this nature. So, I mean, and I was just doing a quick study there. It looks like there's about $40,000 or $50,000 potentially in greater savings that just in this agency alone in attorney's fees that we can maybe do. And fourth thing is that, I mean, I think, you know, we're doing this for whatever political reasons we're doing, but I think we really need to see this in full context of the budget and, okay, how are we going to solve this? So I understand what you guys are doing. I appreciate your hard work, the things you guys are doing. I just have to vote no on this.
Senator Nelson, I understand your position and accept your no vote without any comment. It is part of a bigger budget picture, and it's unfortunate with the split of ways and means that we're doing it in this fashion. There's a much more efficient and, I think, fair way to do it, and that's what we've done for the last 150 years. And the fact that we're not doing it this session is really pretty burdensome, to say the least. We're going to be developing budgets that do not complement each other. We're going to have issues that will divide us that really shouldn't, things we could have settled. There will always be some really tough issues, but maybes are not. And I think both sides have pulled things back off the table for discussion because of that. And things that we would actually probably be supportive of are not in this budget. And should be, and I understand your interest in this, and all I can tell you is I share that answer. Okay, and this is not my choice of how to do this. So, having said that, any other comments? Can we have a roll call vote on the packages, please?
No.
Aye.
Aye. The packages pass and will be sent to a full committee. Lead us on.
Mr. Chair, before we move on, I would just note that Section C recommended change to the appropriation bill. This lays out in exact detail what the appropriation bill would look like for the Department of Agriculture. The reason for this is that in both the House and the Senate, we are going away from one appropriation line for the department and splitting it out with a little more specificity. Again, this is part of a trend you'll see in a lot of the natural resource budgets and other budgets as well to provide more clarity in what the expectations for the funding are used for in each agency's budget. And Mr. Chair, with that, I believe all you need is a motion to approve the conceptual amendments as listed on the LFO memo dated June 14th and move House Bill 5607 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation with the amendments.
I would entertain a motion to that effect.
So moved.
We have a motion on the floor. Any comments from committee members? Roll call vote, please.
No.
Aye.
Aye. The bill is passed to the special Senate committee on.
Special committee on
budget. With a due pass recommendation, noting the no vote in.
Mr. Chair, I assume that you would be carrying both of these bills?
I will be carrying both because I'm the only one in full race.
I'm the only one voting yes.
So I'll give myself a job there. Okay, thank you. That is our work, I believe, for Department of Agriculture.
Yes, sir.
The work session then is closed on 7:07. Thank you. We will now have a 2-hour pause per month. Public hearing on Senate Bill 740. And I'm going to have invited testimony to start with. We'd like to set this up in a very specific way. We're going to have Representative Dingfield to start and outline the bill for us. And then I'm going to ask that we go back and forth with proponents and opponents of the bill as we hear public testimony on this bill. And I want you people to kind of line it up that way. Can we line up proponents and positions? And I'll call them up accordingly. Okay. Representative Dingfelder, would you start the hearing for us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you can hear me here. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate you holding this hearing on Senate Bill 740. And for the record, I'm Jackie Dingfelder, State Representative for House District 45, Northeast Portland. For several years, I've been working actively on the growing problem of electronic waste. In 2004, an estimated 18 million pounds of electronics became obsolete in Oregon homes and small businesses. New electronic products, as I'm sure you're aware, are released every day, creating a huge backlog of products that require recycling and disposal. Experts estimate that only about 10% of these products are currently recycled, and that means that millions of dollars in lost commodities, energy, and resources are wasted. Improper disposal of the lead, mercury, and other hazardous materials and electronics could pose health risks to people as well. Knowing that a real solution would require the input of the electronics industry, both manufacturers and processors, state and local government agencies, and recycling advocates, I worked last session with all of these groups to craft Senate Bill 867, which created an Electronics Product Stewardship Advisory Committee. The reason I'm providing this is because this is important for how this bill came to be, and I just give you a brief overview of what that committee was tasked to do. I spent the last year of my life doing this, so I just wanted to share with you and make sure you understood we spent a lot of time on this. The committee was asked to develop recommendations for infrastructure for reuse and recycling of electronic products, to ensure state efforts are consistent with and supportive of national developments. And I just want to emphasize that because we thought it's very, very important that you understand that parallel to what's going on here, there has been efforts to develop a national infrastructure. And unfortunately, that hasn't happened. It doesn't look like it's going to happen in the near future, and that's one of the reasons we're here today moving forward with this bill. But we wanted to make clear that we want to be consistent with what's going on at the national level, especially keeping in mind that retailers and manufacturers have to deal with 50 states. We also asked the committee to review existing data on the actual impact that used electronic products have on the environment. We wanted to assess existing regulations and recommend any changes that were needed, develop strategies and recommend incentives for business development related to reuse and recycling electronic products, develop recommendations for educating consumers and businesses, and finally assess procurement guidelines that might be developed or used in Oregon. So there's a report which I don't think you have in front of you, but if you're interested, I certainly could provide it to the LFO staff that summarizes all of those elements. It's quite a lengthy report, but very well done, and we were able to do that after meeting about 8 times last year. Actually, we met 7 times, and then we had email interactions to finalize the report. The committee came to agreement on many issues, and we probably had the most robust discussion about which approach to take regarding setting up an e-waste infrastructure in Oregon. And I'll be candid with you, there was no agreement on one approach that came out of the committee. However, I decided to move forward with what I thought was the most reasonable, consumer-friendly, and compromise approach, and that's embodied in Senate Bill 740A in front of you. And this has an upfront fee built into the cost of the product. Now, unfortunately, I mean, I'll also be candid with you. We had several members, and you'll hear from them today, of the committee that didn't support this approach. And I've been open all along to say, okay, you don't support this, but what are the alternatives? What do you support? And let's talk about that if you have another approach. And that hasn't happened here today. So you're going to hear some of the folks who are on the committee that supported it and some that didn't. But my challenge to the folks who didn't support it has been, fine, then come forward with an approach that you think will work for Oregon. So why do we need to act, and why do we need to act now? I had a lot of discussions with local governments, and they're concerned about they're bearing the burden of the costs of disposing these electronic waste. Statewide, the costs for convenient service to the public, our estimates would range from $2.2 million to $3.1 million per year. That's the cost to local governments. In Lane County, right, in our discussions with Lane County, the costs are between $5 and $20 per item to manage the equipment. We believe it's inefficient and costly for the county to deal with electronic waste at a local scale, and a statewide solution will increase efficiency by creating economies of scale for these recycling products. Also, the public wants recycling options for their old electronics. I'm going to ask each one of you how many of the panel members here have a computer, either sitting in an old computer, sitting in their basement, attic, or garage, waiting to be disposed of? Well,
I don't mind the school system, so I cheated.
most of us do. I know I do. And one of my colleagues, when he saw this bill, came up to me and said, I have 10 computers in my garage, and I don't know what to do with them. And how much is it going to cost me? But if you poll the average Oregonian, they will have computers sitting in their basement, garages, not know what to do with it. In 2004, Dell Computers held collection days for the public in 17 cities throughout the U.S., The Portland event was in the top five, bringing in 142 tons of electronic equipment. Metro runs a hotline. They do not collect or have places for you to take computers, but Metro does run a hotline so people who want to know where to take it can call. And their hotline, last year, they had nearly 6,000 calls, and that's an increase of 15% on what to do with electronic equipment. So as more unused electronics accumulate in homes, as their recycling value declines, the recycling system will cost more and more. The Oregon backlog of old computers and TV in storage is projected to grow by 300,000 units this year alone, an accumulated cost that's increasing by $4 million a year. So if Oregon established convenient recycling opportunities, we conservatively expect to collect over 9 million pounds each year. Based on data, this is extrapolated data from collection programs elsewhere in the United States. So in sum, we've been studying this for 4 years, and I believe, and many of my colleagues believe, it's time to act now. We know what the options are. We know what the stakeholders think. The solution that's in front of you will not cost taxpayers more. This bill brings its own funding. It's a fee to be paid by the consumers of electronic products up front when they purchase the product. It's a private sector solution that doesn't bill more government. This bill makes it possible for private businesses and nonprofits to deliver the necessary service. Our intent here is not to grow government or expand existing bureaucracies. And this is an Oregon solution that would contribute to a national solution. If and when a national solution is established, the Oregon system will sunset. And again, we had a lot of discussion about that in the committee. So I'm going to stop here. You're going to hear a lot of testimony from the folks sitting behind me that will talk more about the specifics of the bill, you know, how the advanced recovery fee, or otherwise known as the ARF, will be collected, who's going to collect it. You're going to hear a lot of more discussion about that. But I really appreciate you having this hearing today, and I'm going to hang back here if you have any other questions at the end of the hearing.
Any questions from the panel members? Representative, I have a couple for you. What is this going to look like? Does the average computer consumer has got an old TV set or an old computer in their home? What do they do with that if this plan were to go into effect? What would it look like to them? Do they have to take it to a specific location? Do they put it in a garbage can? What do they do?
Well, the point is, it is legal for them to put it in the garbage can.
I know it is.
And we want to try to encourage people not to do that. Obviously, they could still do it if they wanted to, but we want to do is provide convenient and accessible opportunities for people to recycle their electronic goods. So all they could call Metro, or they could call their county, or they could call their city, and they would be provided with a list of places that they could take it, whether it's run by a nonprofit, the city or county, or a private entity. And the fee would be paid up front. They wouldn't have to pay at the end. They'd pay it up front, and they'd be able to take it to these locations. And that is, it's very sporadic right now throughout the state. Some people have, you know, can take it to your schools. Others can't. Some people have to take it 100 miles. I don't know what the options are in Pendleton, but I know Eastern Oregon is well underserved, especially rural Oregonians. So it would be a convenient drop-off site. Basically, that's what it would look like in your community.
You see these people partnering with, like, the county. Some of the counties now have drop-off sites for electronic equipment. Would you see yourself, you know, partnering with them to bring that in?
Yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, the program could include reimbursing existing programs. That's what we look at. If there's a program that's going on already, such as a county program, the funds that are collected through this bill could either offset the cost to the county, or it could help expand an existing program.
Another question on that matter, what if a company has a program where they're accepting equipment of their own back or other equipment in, could they apply for this program and be a part of the program?
That's a possibility. We actually are very interested to sit down with companies, especially in state, that might be willing to work with us on it. That is not specifically written in the bill, but we're certainly not opposed to having discussions about it.
Last question from me, at least. How does this look mechanically from the retailer who's going to be selling the product and then having to collect a $6 to $10 fee on the product? What's the mechanism for them collecting the money and getting the money into the account?
Well, I may defer to the Department of Revenue, or I'm not sure if they're representatives here or possibly the DEQ, but the way the bill was drafted, and we had a lot of discussions, many, many hours of discussions with Department of Revenue. We also talked to folks who represent the retailers. It would be similar to when we had the tire recycling fund, where the retailer would collect it, and then it would go through, this would actually go through Department of Revenue, and then DEQ would end up working with what's called the third-party organization, which you'll hear more detail about. However, what we've written into this bill is a 3% fee to offset the cost to the retailer of any collection or administration cost, 3% of the amount of dollars that's collected for the advanced recovery fee. Because there will be, of course, this is a fee that they're not currently collecting. But it's not unheard of where retailers have been asked to collect fees before. So we have thought about that and built into the bill a way to offset their costs. Because obviously we don't want to create a new burden for retailers without compensating them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In the spirit of going back and forth in this, Mr. Craven will step up next if he's here in the room. Yes, please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Craven, representing the Oregon Council of the American Electronics Association. AEA is a national, the nation's largest high-tech trade association. We have been engaged both here in Oregon and across the land in this vigorous debate for several years. And I was a participant in the task force last interim, referred to by Representative Dingfelder. I guess I want to start by saying I wish we had brought you, like I always wish about task forces, brought you a shrink-wrapped consensus, everybody's on board, just do it kind of solution. That is not the case in this regard. I think that's always a good way to proceed, and I have to say that this issue really began 4 or 5 years ago nationally as sort of a environmentalists versus business in the broad sense, led by advocacy groups. And it is unfortunate that it has become also sort of an issue of not all businesses being able to give you the exact same position on this issue because of some very good reasons, which you'll hear about. Hewlett Packard's here today, and they can give you at least their perspective on one way that they differ from this proposal. I think it's important to back up just for a second and talk about the problem statement that we're trying to address. Because if there isn't a problem statement to address, working on the details of how to solve it, I think is sort of backwards. We had a task force. We asked DEQ to bring us some information. What's the percentage of solid waste stream that this stuff represents? DEQ said about 0.5% or 1%. We also asked them, is there any evidence in Oregon that the disposal of these products, which is not ideal, no one thinks it's ideal to throw this stuff away, but is it creating a risk to public health and environment in Oregon? And I think what DEQ said is that there's currently little specific data in Oregon to document environmental impacts linked to waste electronics. The Solid Waste Association of North America commissioned a major national study last year on this issue, and their conclusion was that heavy metal concentrations in leachate and landfill gases are extremely far below any limits established to protect public health and environment. The only reason I start off with this is that essentially every story you read about in a paper on this issue, whether it's National, USA Today, or in the Oregonian, the lead is almost always, there's this looming crisis out there and we're all going to be poisoned because if we throw the stuff to the landfill. I have been looking for 4 or 5 years for data to justify some of that hyperbole, and I haven't seen it. But this is not to say that we're trivializing the issue. It's to say that there are differences of opinions as to how best to proceed, and I think it's probably best to characterize this as a challenge for society, for industry, for consumers, for local government. Perhaps that's a better word than a crisis. And I just want to say that that's sort of how I start by looking at, if you jump to the solution phase before you have a clear problem statement, sometimes you think you don't come up with good solutions. I'm going to skip through. I think Representative Dingfelter characterized the task force quite well in that Senate Bill 740 does not come as a recommendation from the task force. We had a straw person vote, and it was predicated on, we're not suggesting legislation, but what do you personally think your organization thinks someday would be the right thing to do? And this proposal, I think, got 4 or 5 votes out of 16 or 17 on the group. So just to characterize that, that's all in the report if you get a copy of it. Clearly, I think one thing the task force did agree on, it was a consensus, was that the best way to proceed with this issue is not state by state with a landfill ban in one state and a consumer tax in another state and a manufacturer tax in another state and companies that are engaged in global commerce, selling computers over the internet, selling them around the world, put this sticker on in Minnesota, put this label on in California, charge $10 in Oregon. I think we all agreed that a more rational approach would be ideal. Senator Wyden just several months ago has introduced a bill in Congress. I'm not going to sit here and say that that's going to become law in the imminent future, but it is being worked on at the federal level, and it's being worked on in Congress to try to bring some kind of national cohesion to the challenge. I think the other issue is that it is not that we are starting from ground zero here and nobody's working on this. Again, you'll hear from Hewlett Packard in a little bit, but a lot of the companies that I represent in AEA, particularly the computer IT manufacturers in this country, have stepped up. I mean, HP does millions of pounds a month of taking back used electronics, their own brand and other people's brands. Dell Computer now has a program to come to your door and take that old Dell computer off your hands when you're done using it. These programs are common in business because, businesses can't throw away 100 monitors in the landfills. That's against federal law. So most businesses, you go out and buy 1,000 computers for Standard Insurance and you're getting ready to swap them out, have relationships with their manufacturers to take those off their hands. They don't just put them in the dumpster out back and haul them out to Arlington. So we're really talking about how to address that individual onesies, twosies issue of the individual homeowner, consumer, and small business. eBay just a couple months ago put up a national website called Rethink, eBay/Rethink, that's sponsored by a lot of our companies, endorsed by a lot of environmental groups, to try to create a national clearinghouse. It links you to donation programs. It links you to people who might want to buy your old computer. I mean, who does this better than eBay? That's just getting up and going. Is receiving thousands of hits a day from people who either want to buy a used computer, sell a used computer, donate one. So that's up and running. Again, as you heard, there are programs running at the local level in Oregon. For any legislator who has a used computer who wants to get rid of it, you go out to Mission Street here, which becomes Highway 22. You go up to the Marion County Solid Waste site right behind the prison and put it in a box and drive home. It'll take you about 15, 20 minutes. And that program's been available for several years and is available today. No charge. Drop it in the box. And those are then processed by a processor. Lane County just started a program. They're actually asking for a few dollars, I think on monitors, $10 or something, to help cover the cost of processing. But there is a program in place in Lane County today. You heard about the Metro website search engine, which will allow you at least to connect to the capacity we have now as we continue to grow capacity. Do we have a comprehensive, perfect system in place now? Absolutely not. Is it tremendously bigger than it was just 2 years ago when we had authorized that task force? Absolutely yes. So I guess, you know, our position on this is it is a challenge. It's worthy of discussion. We've been up to our ears in it for several years. At this time, we believe in a more flexible, innovative, private sector-driven solution before we do a one-size-fits-all government solution. That's really the debate here today, not whether we think it's an issue or not, but how best to address it. You'll hear maybe a little bit about California. California did initiate this kind of fee January of this year. It's not moving without a certain bit of clunkiness. As you would imagine, a big new program like this in a giant state like California. Lots of questions about how it's proceeding. As someone just showed me an article before the hearing, the recycling manager from City of Los Angeles, quote, "The program's a nightmare," end quote. Now, maybe it'll not be a nightmare a year or so from now, and maybe we can watch and learn from their experiment. But it is to characterize it anything other than a massive new government program, that's what it is in California. This bill's a little bit different. This bill says we turn over the money to a contractor and let them incur the wrath of all the people with questions rather than DEQ doing it. But, you know, it's similar. I think in California, an interesting issue that came up was the issue of, if some of you have been in Revenue Committee hearings and have heard about this issue of nexus, the California Revenue staff issued a memo that said basically California does not have the ability to reach out and tax internet mail order sales. The program is proceeding nevertheless. Right. But let me just hit a couple of specifics and I'll wrap it up. I mean, we have a basic fundamental problem with the basic proposal to put the tax on. But we're seeing in California there are advocates down there who are already saying the $6 to $10 isn't enough. It should be $20, $30, or $40. So we're not sure, first of all, whether this is the right number. Second, this bill is structured that this recycling third party would recycle all used electronics, not just monitors and TVs, but we're only putting a fee on monitors and TVs. So the question is, are we generating enough money? We basically turn this over to a third-party contractor, and I think if you look at the bill's details, it's pretty sketchy as to what are the financial oversights that you would have in this process, what's the profit margin for the third-party collector. There's a whole lot of issues, I think, that ought to be asked and that aren't answered in this bill. There's notification procedures. Manufacturers have to notify the Department of Revenue of all the individual sellers who carry their products. In some cases, manufacturers distribute their product to a regional warehousing, like a Best Buy warehouse facility in Washington State, who then puts the products into the various states depending upon demand. It's another big burden on manufacturers even to try to track that down. It's cost our companies millions of dollars in California just to sort that. Looks like a simple thing, but to sort that out. And finally, I think you heard in the previous testimony that if there was a national program put in place, this bill would sunset. And that does not say that in the bill. It says that if a national comparable program were to put into place, DEQ would make a recommendation to the legislature, perhaps, to repeal the program. But there's no automatic sunset as I read the language in the bill. So I appreciate the chance to have these comments. We have had very little discussion of this bill to date. I think about 90 to 100 minutes of debate in the Senate Environment Land Use Committee, and I think it's an awful big pill to swallow, perhaps, this late in session. So.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions?
Just a quick question. Jim, you represent a lot of people. Does AEA have members on both sides of this issue? Are they all on one side? Or what's the breakdown?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I don't have a numeric breakdown. There are members of the American Electronics Association who would prefer an ARF. I don't know if they're here in the room today. They basically represent Japanese television makers, and there's nothing wrong with Japanese television makers.
I think we all have one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you actually have a Chinese-made, Japanese-branded television. But where it's broken down, and again, I'll let Hewlett-Packard tell you a little more about these dynamics, is companies like Hewlett-Packard who have stepped up to the plate for 17 years to take this stuff back, to incorporate that cost in the cost of their product, and to recycle millions of pounds each month nationally. In California, they were not allowed any kind of exemption. You know, HP said in California, look, if you're going to tax people, you know, if you're going to tax manufacturers, how about not taxing the manufacturers already stepped up to the plate? But they were not given that consideration in California. There are other companies who, quite frankly, I think, you know, they don't want to get in the recycling business like HP and Dell. They just assume let you all put a fee on consumers and kind of be done with it. So there are some, like I said at the beginning, I wish industry was all in the same mind on this issue. We're not quite there yet.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you. I'd call up Tom Gallagher and Mike Dewey.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Gallagher. I'm representing Japanese TV makers.
You wish.
Although, actually, the Japanese TV makers are part of an electronics recycling coalition made up of Canon, Epson, Hitachi, LG Electronics, IBM, JVC, Mitsubishi Electronics, Panasonic, Philips, RCA, Sanyo, Samsung, Sharp, Sony, and Thomson. Most of my members are members of AEA. I'd like to do a couple of things with you. I'd like to go through the bill and explain some of the provisions of the bill. But before I do that, while it's so fresh in your mind, let me answer a couple of Jim's good questions. We have a handout here in California that we put together. It's not a newspaper article, but when I find it in all these papers, I'll pass it out to you. Mike says it's right here. There are some problems in California on a basic system, but our plan is not exactly the same as California, and a number of the problems that California has we'll be talking about in terms of the details here. For example, in terms of letting a company that has a computer recycling program going right now, and I will read from a quote from the Manufacturers Coalition publication on this, the coalition applauds the individual initiatives by companies that have voluntarily established programs for collection and recycling, and we think they should be rewarded. We haven't put this in the bill, but it's our understanding of the way this bill would work that a company like HP or any other company could apply to the ARF for monies to run their existing program. That's what we're trying to do, is collect these products and put them in the proper processing waste stream. And so I don't see any reason why Hewlett-Packard couldn't continue to run their program in Oregon and they have it either paid for or subsidized out of the same $10 fee that's being paid by everybody else, which, by the way, is not a tax on manufacturers. It's a consumer tax. So we would look forward to that. Now, whether or not we spell out every detail in the bill, as Jim has said, it didn't make sense to me. I mean, you don't want to load down the bill like that. The provisions in the bill that actually deal with that are the advisory committee made up of manufacturers, recyclers, and sellers and other persons, meaning consumers, and a DEQ contract, which goes through first an RFP process and then through an actual contract negotiation with a third-party entity. That's where, and I'll talk about it later on in my testimony, we think a number of issues ought to be put on the record here that would go into those types of contracts. That's where the deals ought to be done, and that's where they ought to be put together by the experts. If the opponents of the bill would like to come forward and say to us, we'd feel a lot more comfortable if we spelled out some of these provisions. I'd be happy to do it. One of the things they raised with me as well, it says there's an advanced recycling fee or recovery fee, but it doesn't say there's no other fees. They have an amendment in there that say it would say nobody else can charge another fee. I mean, that's a red herring, and there's a lot of red herrings here. I want to start the basics of my testimony with reading out of an article. Oh, just one last thing on internet sales. Jim will probably look this up, but the California Supreme Court, appellate court, I'm sorry, just ruled against Borders on internet sales of books and so forth, saying that California did have the right to collect a sales tax on that. So I think that that whole issue is moving forward to some extent. I want to quote a little bit out of an article from one of the national weeklies called Tech Daily. And I think it lays out the problem that we're grappling with here pretty well. It says here, and I'm quoting, the impasse on federal legislation on the matter likely will not be enacted anytime soon. Industry execs and Capitol Hill staffers said, despite the fact that some 30 states are either considering or have passed their own recycling laws. Industry is all over the map on this, said a frustrated Hill staffer. They need to grow up and come to a solution. I want to make the following proposal to you. This is not an industry battle. This should be a consumer bill. This should be about people being able to take their electronic products out in a reasonable manner and dispose of them or put them back in the waste stream, in a recycling stream, in a responsible manner. This is not a dueling industry bill, and it shouldn't be. As a matter of fact, in the quote, and this goes on to say, in talking about the advanced proposal fee, the fee goes into a fund that's our, and this is California's fee. The California model is the one we think is right, said Mark Anthony Signorino, Director of Technology Policy at a tech group, AEA. We want to try to keep it as simple as possible. Now, my guys are Japanese TV manufacturers. They also make other electronic computer products, and Hewlett-Packard and others are not collecting television sets, which is a major piece of this bill. But we also are active all over the country, have national plants in this country. There are two plants in Oregon. There are three or seven plants in Washington and Oregon together. We're not the giant Oregon operation as Hewlett-Packard did, and I respect Hewlett-Packard both for being a responsible company, for having a lot of employment here, and we do anything we can in that sense to make Hewlett-Packard a comfortable corporate citizen in this state. So let me walk through the bill. If you have the bill in front of you, I'm going to go through it very quickly. Section 1 says what is collected. We're going to pick up central processing units, computer monitors, computer printers, laptops, and television. If you flop down later in this section, it says, what's the fee collected on? The fee is collected only on televisions, laptops, and I'm going to read it here quickly if I can find it. Which I can't. I think it's monitors. Oh, flat screens, computer monitors, and televisions down in Section 3. The purpose of the fee is just to put money in the system. We're going to recycle more than we collect. And we're going to recycle legacy pieces of equipment that are out there, stuff that hasn't been paid for. Now, this is what others have called a sales tax on computers. It's exactly a fee. It's an advanced recycling disposal fee. It's going to be collected, and one of the big arguments I've heard, why, look, it's $10 on a $70 television. Well, you're not paying $10 on a $70 television. That's a collection mechanism, an instrument, so that when you pay that $10 on that product, you are going to get to recycle your printers, your laptops, your computers, your televisions, including not just the one that you paid the $10 on, including all the other ones in your garage. And that when Mike gets into it, he'll talk about whether there's enough money to do all this. And I would ask you to ask the people that have existing programs, are they doing that? And can they do that? And can they do that without a fee? By the way, I just took my computer down to Marion County, and they charged me a fee to drop it off because it's so expensive to process that stuff now. And the point I want to make there is getting a single collection system in a streamlined manner is efficient, will reduce the overall cost of collection, and will be just that much more effective for everybody and easier for everybody. I'm not aware of all the different details of all the different programs other companies have tried. I think you can ask them when they come up how their programs work. If they're better than this program, if they can do it better and cheaper, I'll amend the bill and they can collect all the stuff. If it's not better or cheaper and they want to run their own separate system, we're okay on that. The point still comes back is this is a consumer bill, not a manufacturer bill. This is to help people dispose of their products. And I simply say that this disposal fee is just a lot like your garbage fee right now. The local jurisdiction says, here's what you're going to collect and here's how you're going to collect it. Here's what your fee you're going to charge. Here's how you're going to charge for it. And then they go out and hire a private company to go and do that. And they monitor and collect from that private company. Jim talked a lot about not having the oversight, et cetera. Again, you can put that in the bill if you want. I'd be happy to. We have drafts of that stuff down in Legislative Council. I think that's the responsibility of DEQ and the contract and recycling fee. That's why they have to come back here. They have to come back here to raise or lower the fee. They have to come back here to sunset the program. If you want an automatic sunset on the program of the day the president signs that bill, we'll put it right in here.
Hopefully the governor will sign the bill.
No, the federal bill.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Moving on to Section 2, the electronic stewardship account, and the Department of Revenue, which is down in Section 4. I'll read you on page 3 the line that says, the department will collect the fee in the manners provided by ORS Chapter 305 and 314. Pretty simple process. The manufacturer tells them who they're selling the computers to. They now have a registry to send out under their rules, the collection mechanism, the forms to collect the money. The money will be remitted quarterly, and there's a provision in one of the amendments to allow them to go after a manufacturer with a penalty for those that don't follow the rules, just like there would be in any revenue collection system. So the Department of Revenue is going to collect the dollars. The reason to use the Department of Revenue, it's in Oregon, it's the most efficient operation. They're the people that do this stuff. They're the people that everybody files with. I've had legislators talk to me about having DEQ do it. No, DEQ doesn't have a revenue collection process, and I've been in this room many times not putting new programs into DEQ. Representative Krupp has talked about us about totally privatizing this and letting the garbage haulers do it. And if you want to talk about that, we can. The garbage haulers, thank God, aren't here, but if they were, they would have a lot to say about that. They prefer this separate collection system with the drop-offs. I've been through most of the recycling bills in Oregon. I've been through the bottle bill. I've been through the plastic recycling. I've been through the startup of all of the curbside recycling programs. When we put this bill together in the amended version, I think this is the cleanest and the simplest and the safest for sellers and retailers. Nobody's going to take this back except the people who contract and who want to do it and write that contract with.
Fine. Keep going.
Okay. Have a contract with DEQ to do this. I'm going to skip down now to what the duties are of the Department of Environmental Quality in Section 6. They're to manage the system. They have the advisory committee. They do an RFP. They'll enter into a contract. That's where all the nitty-gritty details will be on this, and I can't imagine that advisory committee wouldn't have Hewlett-Packard and Jim Craven on it. They've been involved from the very beginning. Section 7 talks about product stewardship approach and a manufacturer's responsibility. It talks about developing the programs in a better way, the computers in a better way so they're easier to process, taking this information and moving along. Section 8 and 9 and 10, I think you can read for yourselves. I won't spend time on those. They're a little bit more practical detail. Let me wrap this up by making a couple of other comments on some of the things that I've heard. I've been around and talked to almost every member of the legislature on this so far, and I've heard these kind of comments, which I want to put on the record. I don't think you should put them in the bill, but we could. These are what certain members have raised with me. First, I haven't run into a single member yet who wants to take their computer or TV out and dump it in their garbage can. They want to do something with it. They want to give it to somebody. They want to reuse it. They're just not a pair of old shoes. Some members want the advisory committee to encourage the hiring of people who have difficulty getting jobs, whether handicapped people, start-off employment, simple processing procedures like this, some collection running drop-off points or working at drop-off points are classic places to do that kind of disadvantaged hiring. That would be part of an RFP It would be part of the advisory committee process. I would recommend they seriously look at this. There's ways to get all parts of our community involved in these programs. Another one saw the value of giving these computers, refurbishing these computers, and giving them to low-income students, low-income school children. That's a marvelous idea. I mean that's just so simple and so smart. If we collect them, we clean the hard drives, we put them back together, we've got them, we're not out competing in the stream against somebody else's new product. But all these things are possible when you have this kind of a collection system. And I'm certain that Hewlett-Packard already has parts of these things plugged into their system because it's an extremely responsible company. One of the editorial board people in Washington County said, make sure you protect personal privacy. Make sure that the requirement of the contract is that they wipe off the hard drives clean so that we're not floating around with a bunch of equipment on there that has all the personal information on there that you have on your computer.
That's how use reporting could be on that.
You won't be able to fly.
Senator Nelson, I'm sorry they all pointed to you. That was completely unfair. Many of the members I talked to wanted to totally privatize this system. And I think that we have managed to have extensive conversations with a number of them, explaining them that's really not possible. Let's see. The last thing I want to say is Tennessee. You may have heard some discussions about the state of Tennessee. I have a number of newspaper articles talking about the FBI sting operation that caught a number of legislators taking bribes. And unfortunately, the FBI set themselves up as an electronics recycling firm, allowed them to get an electronics recycling bill passed. I want to point out to you on the record that neither Mike nor I are FBI agents. And then having worked with Mike since 1991, I know he's not organized enough to develop a sting operation.
Well, I was kind of hoping for something, but obviously it's not forthcoming, you know, you're telling me. Thank you very much for your testimony. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mike Dewey for the record, representing Waste Management. I'll try and be very brief. You have others that want to speak, and Tom has done a very good job. Waste Management's perspective is a little bit different in the sense that we are a vertically integrated company. We have a subsidiary, which is Recycle America, which I believe is the largest recycler in America. And recognizing that, quite frankly, we profit from the landfilling of these types of materials. And I think Mr. Craven's state is correct from the standpoint of our landfills. There's not going to be a problem. But they ought not to go to a landfill. There are certain components that after they're recovered ought to go to a landfill. But there is a lot left to be recovered and reused in these computers. The big problem is not necessarily computers in the next few years. It's going to be TVs. And TVs, because of HDTV, the amount of programming, the prices are going down. I was just talking to one of an individual in this building that I trust a whole lot about, and I said, you're going to have a problem with this bill because it's a fee bill. And this person said, well, right away, it wasn't long ago I put my TV, it worked, in a pickup here in Salem. And I went from nonprofit to nonprofit. I explained that my TV worked, and nobody would take it. So we went out to the Marion County Transfer Station out east of here, and it cost him, I think he said, $10, and then he threw it over the side. And that is not how we want to do things. Now, Marion County, at one point in time, when I talked to the Association of Oregon Counties, they said, well, we really don't have a problem here in Marion County because it's free. And I said, well, I think it's probably being subsidized. And they got to the point where it can't be free anymore. Our interest in this bill is that we have, in our subsidiary, we have facilities that recover this material. And the problem we have in Oregon is we don't have the infrastructure. Hewlett-Packard does, and we respect what they're doing, and we think others ought to do it if they're capable of doing it. But we don't have the infrastructure here in the Northwest to be able to build facilities big enough to make it worthwhile from the standpoint of a profitability to recover this material. You have nonprofits that do this, but if we want this to be good for business, there ought to be some opportunities. For example, as I understand, in Palm Springs, Waste Management has a collection contract there. They're the solid waste company. They're going door-to-door collecting TVs. Now, they would not do that under any other business model other than what they have in California, is they get paid basically to do that. So that's part of the California program. Now, we would agree that the California program is a little heavy on the local government or the state government side, and that's why we tried to organize this in terms of a more private-orientated model. The other point that I wanted to make here very briefly is that we have material recovery rates to meet in this state. And we operate in the metro area, the metro region, and have substantial operations there. And the metro rate, I think, is 62% that we're supposed to meet. And I believe that we're at 57%. So any more additional recovery we can make helps out in meeting those goals, because it's very difficult to get to that next 4 or 5%, because all the low-hanging fruit is already been taken. So we've got now food composting that's starting to take off, and that may generate some percentages. And here is another opportunity. With regard to other solutions, and there are other solutions, but quite frankly, the federal government is not going to be doing anything in the foreseeable future. If you want to put a sunset on it, I would put a sunset on, because I don't believe you can put a sunset on that says that the President of the United States signs a bill, that would basically nullify our legislation. So I would say that probably isn't a way to go. I know Senator Schrader has been very concerned about having this bill work in the next biennium in terms of financially, because you'd have to make a loan if this bill passed to the Department of Revenue and DEQ, but we believe there is enough income generated, because there is so much out there in terms of it's going to be sold in the sales category, that there is going to be money based on the model left over. And in the next biennium, it looks like there's going to be about $13 million available to this program. So we see real opportunities for our company to be involved in this. That's in part why we're here. But also, we have an ethic about recycling, and we want to make it happen. So we think this is a good approach. It's a private approach, and I would agree we need to find ways to get nonprofits involved in this, and they should be sitting on the advisory board, and that should be a part of the RFP. And last but not least, I want to speak to Senator Nelson's district. That's the area where you're going to have the most concern, and that's where you're going to have, and he'll agree with me because we have these telecom conversations, I think, that you're going to have some sort of subsidy in this particular area, because otherwise it's not going to happen. But this is going to be built into this program, because we don't want people having to pay $30 or $40 to get rid of something, because that's what the program costs in Pendleton or John Day or whatever the case may be. So we think it's a good approach. We worked on the legislation in California. We learned a lot from what happened in California, and that's why we've taken the tack that we have on this legislation. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your
testimony. Next up is Paul Cosgrove and Marcy Eastham.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Marcy Eastham. I'm Northwest Regional Government Affairs Manager for Hewlett-Packard out of Corvallis. I appreciate the opportunity to again comment on Senate Bill 740 as A. Hewlett-Packard opposes this bill, instead supporting the creation of a market-driven, fair, and efficient recycling program for electronics recycling. Hewlett-Packard has been in the recycling business for electronic products for 17 years. In that 17 years, we have recycled 500 million pounds in two facilities here in the United States. We have also recently contracted with a facility in Canada to begin collection processes there. We also have a facility in the EU we're working on. We also have a very ambitious goal of reaching 1 billion pounds recycled in the next 2 years. That's quite a steep ramp up, but we're very confident that we can do that. We are doing that through a number of different programs. One was a take-back program we've piloted with retailer Office Depot, and we had a 7-week free nationwide pilot program where anyone could bring in any product for free and drop it off. We took in 10.5 million pounds of product, and that included old console television sets, legacy computer systems, an amazing variety of products. We are continuing to negotiate with retailers to continue this kind of program. I'd like to address our concerns with this particular bill, however. As you've heard from other speakers, the advance fee mandated at a point of sale is a sales tax imposed on consumers, and that includes government entities. Oregonians don't want new fees or new taxes. There is a potential for a higher than anticipated program cost. Programs such as NARF have higher administrative fees. In California, again citing the example of the one program that's been up and running, they hired approximately 100 new state employees just to start up the program. They also have budgeted $5.9 million annually for just the cost of collecting the fee. That comes out of the program dollars and does nothing to recycle products. It places a burden on retailers. There's also unfair advantage for distance retailers. There was a comment made about the California Supreme Court finding that they could tax Borders. Borders has a presence in California. Those organizations or businesses that do not have a nexus or a certain presence in the state, according to the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution, you cannot collect a fee from them. So if I buy a white box off the Internet, you cannot charge a fee to me for purchasing that product. There's an inequity for manufacturers. There's no manufacturer responsibility. A manufacturer-based program inspires the manufacturer to improve their product for better recycling. Through our process, we have learned that we were using a multiple different type of screw with different screw heads going in all sorts of strange directions. We've simplified our process. We make a product that's easier to take apart. We design, in the design stage, we're designing for end of life. That's manufacturer's responsibility and helps in the efficient recycling of product. By taking the burden off of manufacturers, you're allowing them to not continue to try to improve their processes for ease of recycling. And that addresses the lack of incentive for improvement. We found that by going through our improvement processes, we've been able to lower our recycling costs. And that is why we have been so aggressive at trying to bring in additional products out of the waste stream and into our recycling facilities in the United States. We believe that an approach that provides flexibility to manufacturers will result in an effective, fair, and low-cost solution for managing electronic waste. We also believe this process is the best one for the environment. It gives manufacturers the flexibility to implement their responsibility in a way that can drive environmental improvements through individual company design for environmental programs. And as everyone has noted, our preference also is for the federal government to implement this system. We're fully supportive of Senator Wyden's bill and had worked with him extensively on the development of that. A uniform national framework should result in lower costs and more efficient recycling systems. We're looking forward to participating in future hearings and to providing our expertise and experience to assist the Oregon legislature in developing an effective low-cost solution. We would invite any member of this body to visit our Roseville, California recycling facility to see how it's done, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, committee. Any questions?
I suppose I have a few, and I hope you don't mind taking a couple of questions.
Happy to.
I've been thinking about this, and number one, with a wife that spent several years in ministry in Corvallis, I can't do anything but say I love Hewlett-Packard. I mean, you know. But I keep wondering, as good as your system is and as wonderful as it is, could you handle all of the old and new computers that are out there if people wanted to bring them to you? I mean, wouldn't that kind of swamp your system? I mean, you did the Home Depot thing, but it was limited in time. As much as I love Home Depot, I don't get there very often. You know, it's not on my normal drive path and so on.
Well, one of the the current facilities that we have, we can we certainly can handle an increased amount of product coming back, because as I said, we're planning to, our goal is to add another 500 million pounds recycled within the next 2 years. That's a significant increase, considering in the past 17 years that's how much we've collected. We're very aggressively going after that. Now, as to whether we could handle every single product out there, I don't think that's reasonable given this point in time. However, certainly you become developing additional facilities and working in partnerships to try to work with those recycling programs and recyclers themselves who have these state-of-the-art facilities.
I just keep thinking about it and wonder, you know, how you would handle the cost. I mean, if you tried to ramp up, if you could do it, wouldn't you end up having to attach to it some kind of cost just like this? That's kind of what I'm driving at.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Senator Shields, Paul Kosker, representing Hewlett-Packard. HP has internalized the cost already in its products. So has Dell. And just to, as further response, although I represent HP and not Dell, there's a representative Dell behind me. They, too, have different kinds of recycling programs, not just exactly the same as HP's, but the major IT companies have all set up programs, and they've internalized those costs and are all aggressively seeking product. They are trying to solve the problems that people perceive with not having ability to get rid of these products in a responsible manner, and they're aggressively meeting that challenge. So it isn't just all HP's problem. Have to be just all HP's solution, and it isn't in terms of other companies doing their part, at least in the IT arena.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I'm not suggesting that it's HP's or Dell's problem. I'm just suggesting I want to see a system, because I hear the people that don't want to take these things and put them in their garbage cans. I want to see a system that gets to the whole market. You're doing a wonderful job at HP, but I don't see it getting everybody. I don't think you can handle everybody. And if you did, you'd probably have to set up a system somehow that would cost money, just like this one is going to cost some money, too. I'm just struggling through this with you.
Mr. Chair, if I might just mention briefly, because we are now in the Budget Committee, and what has been discussed up to this point by Mr. Gallagher and to some extent by Mr. Dewey is a whole lot of willingness to do substantive changes to the bill and to address some of the concerns that I think you've seen and Ms. Easton has tried to describe about how this works with a company that has stepped up to the plate, and we're not the only one, but we're one of the ones that has done that. I would just point out to start with, the bill has been around for a number of months. There's been one set of amendments adopted by the Environment and Land Use Committee. There's another set of amendments attached to your materials here, and none of those problems, those really significant basic problems on how this bill would work in the real world, how we could address the problems of how it would not penalize a company like HP that stepped up, none of those are addressed by any of those amendments. And in my view, it's not the appropriate place here in the Budget Committee to have to deal with those substantive processes that should have been dealt with beforehand. But secondly, I'd just like to point out that I think in the excellent fiscal statement prepared by Mr. Hughes and reviewed by Mr. Siebert, I'm sure Mr. Siebert had more than just a reviewing input into this, there are even a whole lot of questions about how this would work from a fiscal or budgetary perspective that I think are appropriate to highlight for you and haven't been mentioned so far. If you read the comments starting on page 2 of 3 of the fiscal statement you have, it talks about the overhead that is absolutely necessary if the EU is going to be involved in this and the Department of Revenue. That's new overhead for people who use the HP system that isn't necessary. And it talks about contract payments, if you look at the bottom of page 2, $389,000 in the first biennium to the selected entity. But again, as Mr. Craven pointed out, there's no specification in the bill. That's all to be determined, what that contracted entity does, how much it spends on administration, and how much it spends on actual recycling services. That contracted entity isn't intended under the bill to do anything other than contract itself with collectors and recyclers. So it's a whole other layer of administration. There's at the last of page 2 and starting into page 3, talks about a $55,000 personal services contract for research and analysis to identify outcome criteria to include in the RFP and determine the net costs of recycling electronic products. We're talking about a contract to decide what we're going to do in a contract that then administers other contracts for recycling programs. That's the kind of concern we see about setting up this kind of system. It may be, and I expect it is going to be considerably less expensive than the model in California that Mr. Craven accurately quoted from the Los Angeles City Recycling Coordinator as being a disaster for everyone. But this has not been terribly well thought through, even from the financial budgetary perspective. So I would suggest to you that there are many, many substantive how this works kinds of questions that have yet to be decided and discussed and worked through. They're left to an advisory committee in this bill. There are also many, many fiscal concerns that I think you as a budget committee should have with respect to the lack of detail about how this all works from a financial perspective. And for those reasons, we would request that you not take action on this bill at this point.
Mr. Chair, if I may address your question, Senator Shields. I would, speaking on behalf of our recycling team and your concerns about capacity, I think it would be a problem we'd be pretty delighted to have, quite frankly, is how do we expand this and improve the number of products that are coming back out of the waste stream. I think the challenge that also is not addressed in this bill is its education to the public. Everyone says, how do I do it? I don't know. There has to be public education on availability, processes, what's available, how it works. With every new product that we sell, we include information on how to recycle this product at end of life. With some of our products, you'll find a bag right inside it that you can just pop it in the mail. We try to make it as easy as possible. But it's a consumer education piece. It's very easy to just throw it in the garage, up on the shelf, and forget about it. And we acknowledge that. But we really believe that consumer education is the only way you're going to increase the number of products that are coming out of people's basements and garages and getting them recycled appropriately.
Well, I'm going to kind of cut off. Do you have any more questions?
No, I can have
a lot
more
testimony. It's 3 o'clock. Paul, I'll say this, appreciate both your testimonies, and we all bow before you, Patrick, in the state. We appreciate you being corporate headquarters here. I would say this, though, as I listen to both testimony at this point, and we are comparatively close to stepping outside of the bounds of what we're supposed to do in this committee, but we had to vet this carefully so we'd have an understanding of what we're going to do. I saw nothing or heard nothing here that would lead me to believe that Hewlett-Packard couldn't continue its present program and increase the program in conjunction with this program. You can apply for funds which will go to Hewlett-Packard. You continue to be as effective as you could in recycling. You can answer this later or comment later if you would. But I would like to hear that later at a different time. We haven't got time right now. And I'm very confused about capacity here. We're having a lot of figures thrown around about how much you can do, how much you can do nationally, how much you can do locally, how much the state needs done. I'd like to have those figures vetted later on also so we know exactly what, or not exactly, as closely as we can, what the total capacity of the state is necessary, because there's pent-up demand here that's obviously going to level out. But we also are using more electronics all the time. We're having a turnover. We're going to high-density TV. So there's lots of very big numbers floating around. I'd like to have some idea what our capacity is right now, where that capacity is going, and what this program has to do to meet that capacity if it becomes law. But thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Very much.
I'm going to call up now Matt Blevins and Randy Tucker. I hate to cut anybody off. We are going to be running out of time quickly, so please be concise and precise.
Chair Bates, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. I'll be quick and to the point because a number of the points that I would like to make have already been made. Oregon Environmental Council has been active on this issue for a while. We were members of the work group that's been referenced earlier and have tried to work towards a solution to deal with what we see as a looming problem for Oregon and nationally. We believe that this approach does make a lot of sense, that it is a reasonable compromise among a lot of different approaches that are out there. and that it does this in a cost-effective way that does not broaden government oversight and creates jobs while also lessening the impact of what we see as, again, a huge potential public health issue that's out there. Again, I think it's important to remember that with this issue of electronics that are being put into the waste stream, we see a real issue of contamination in the waste stream and in our water and air. These pieces of equipment contain a number of different toxic materials like lead and mercury, and if we just end up with them in the waste stream, there's high likelihood that those will end up contaminating the environment and causing bigger health problems down the line. We think that this is a good step in the direction of helping to get those out of the waste stream in a cost-effective manner. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Questions? Mr. Tucker.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Special Agent Randy Tucker, Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. Slip fair, sorry.
I made another mistake, too. I didn't see $10,000 smaller market rates or shrubs around me, so I think we can pretty well assume this is not a sting operation.
That's right. We government employees don't really have that access to those small, unmarked bills. I'd like to just very also offer some very brief testimony in support of Senate Bill 740. Metro, as Representative Dingfelder mentioned, has seen a steady increase in the number of calls we receive from households and businesses seeking places to take their used electronics for reuse or recycling. As you may know, we operate the solid waste disposal system for the Portland metropolitan area. So Representative Dingfelder referred to the 6,000 calls we got last year, and we don't anticipate that number declining anytime soon. And we also participated, my colleague Janet Matthews was a member of the Electronic Products Stewardship Advisory Committee that was established last session by Senate Bill 867, mentioned by Representative Dingfelder. Metro supports Senate Bill 740 because it will help us and local governments by bringing product producers and retailers of electronics, including the ones that are not already doing so, of course, into the circle of parties responsible for end-of-life product management. We have an opportunity in this state to be a national leader with this shared responsibility approach that Metro fully supports. There are a few elements in this bill that bring our support: shared responsibility, a sustainable financing mechanism, convenient opportunities for recycling, and a flexible and performance-oriented administration. I don't need to go into detail about those. It's all in the bill, obviously. Just wanted to go on records with our support for this piece of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Tucker. Questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Julie Brandis.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Julie Brandis with Associated Oregon Industries and its Retail Council. Part of AOI's membership does include about the 10 of the nation's largest retailers, and they have been following this both on national and state levels. One of our concerns about this legislation is in relation to what we call the bricks and mortar stores. It is unlikely that a state could collect a fee on items purchased on the Internet. And Mr. Gallagher did talk about the Borders case in California. That is because they do have a nexus in California. They actually have a physical presence. But the Commerce Clause would apply and prohibit Oregon from imposing a fee and collecting it from out-of-state retailers who do not have a substantial nexus within Oregon. The second point I wanted to bring up is maybe a little bit more of a personal point from my experience here at the legislature. I had the great opportunity to help draft legislation, along with Mr. Gallagher, on the creation of the Energy Trust of Oregon. That came out of Senate Bill 1149. And, you know, one of the reasons we created the trust the way that we did, and legislators had a great hand in that as well, is that a non-general fund revenue source is not safe from legislative raids. And as ratepayers, I know it's hard to believe, but it's true. And our members hold trust funds pretty near and dear. And I know you've all been caught in the middle of some of our fights on the unemployment trust fund raids. Still, we wanted to create something that would prohibit, or at least in our minds, prevent ratepayer money from being raided by the legislature, with all due respect. so that it went to.
Never do that.
They refused of taking bribes and stealing money.
I'm just being, very honest. So in the legislation that created the trust, which was Senate Bill 1149, there was a little, quite a bit of direction in where the money would go, as differentiating renewable resources as well as conservation dollars. And that was very important to the customers. It also clearly put the PUC on the spot for the contracting, and we had a lot of say, customers did at the PUC, on how that contract was created and the responsibilities the PUC had in that. So, you know, my point here is that a third-party organization in creating that is not an easy task. And I think looking at the Energy Trust of Oregon, that is a good way to do it. I think AOI is very proud of how we did that. But that took about 6 years to create, and we were back last session trying to protect it from the right legislative opinion that would allow the legislature to raid that money. So, again, those are some of my more personal thoughts about my concerns, that I don't think we're there yet with this legislation and creating a vehicle that would be able to avoid the raids. So I fear that we'd create this tax and then it would just easily be raided from the DEQ. So those are some comments.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I may not get these names quite correct. Alex, I can't quite read the last name. Kyler. And Doug
Myers.
Your handwriting is as bad as a doctor's. The standard, believe me, is low. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Myers, representing Association of Oregon Recyclers, and that is my handwriting you're reading. I'm sorry. That's why I print. I'd like to introduce Alex Kyler, who is president of the Association of Oregon Recyclers, which is a statewide organization with about 400 members, anywhere from individual recyclers to huge corporations to various government bodies. And with that, Alex.
Thanks. So, Chair Bates, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm chair of the Association of Oregon Recyclers. On the drive up here, I passed a member truck warehouser that was heading down with a load of cardboard to its mill in Springfield, and caught up with a truck that was hauling agricultural plastic waste from a smaller member, Agriplast, who's located right here in Marion County. And they bale and chip and return to market, of all things, baling twine. Last year, the gamut of membership that we had returned $178 million worth of materials, recycled materials, to industry. We're becoming more and more adept at providing services to industry. Feedstocks is what we call them. But in addition to feedstocks, our members provide feedback to industry. And you heard the woman from HP talk about how they learned that they could demanufacture their equipment much faster and more efficiently. These are the kinds of things that we love to hear, is that's that product stewardship feedback, where you get a company thinking about that end-of-life disposal. Now, I've stood on the edge of many landfills in Oregon. I've been to probably almost every landfill in Oregon in the time that I've been affiliated with the Association of Oregon Recyclers. And I am going to tell you that I get scared for my kids and my grandkids every time I do stand on the edge of a landfill. Maybe there isn't empirical evidence that points to computers providing a problem in our future. However, when you put computers together with turpentine and paint and food waste and dead animals and all the kinds of household goods and industrial goods that go into our landfills and expect to entomb them for the remainder of our time on this planet, I think that it's just simply naive to think that there aren't going to be problems in the future. One of the more important things that I heard when I was starting my career in recycling was that landfills represent a fortune squandered. And so what we see as recyclers is not whether a material has a problem necessarily when it's entombed in a landfill, but what sort of value that might return to industry. And that's what this bill does. This bill will provide a way for Oregonians to return computers easily to whether it's HP or Target or Office Depot, whoever wants to become qualified through that contractor that DEQ will hire to re-administer the funds in support of recycling. This is a beautiful system. We think it will work very well. I wanted to just close here by pointing out there's been some talk about Ron Wyden's bill and how this provides a national solution. Ron Wyden's bill is a tax credit for those who work on recycling of electronic equipment. It's not necessarily a product stewardship bill, a producer responsibility bill, a recycling infrastructure bill. It's simply a tax credit. And while we support this kind of tax credit, we're also acutely aware that this is probably the only kind of thing that will pass in this political climate that we have today in Washington, is these kinds of tax credit efforts. And in fact, the Senate Public Works Committee is taking up another tax credit bill on behalf of recycling, indeed tomorrow. There's many people in my industry who would love to see more talk about product stewardship, and simply is not going to be the kind of thing that can pass in this under this administration. My day job is as a solid waste and recycling analyst with the City of Eugene. My number's in the telephone book. When people want to call about recycling questions, it rings right at my desk. And I can tell you that Oregonians want to recycle their computers. They call and call and call. And this is the question that people in who sit in the chair that I sit in are getting, is how do I get rid of my computer? They don't want to put it into the landfill. And I think the inclusion of computers in this bill, and especially of televisions, is a very important piece. We may be able to distribute a lot of computers back to school children and back to nonprofit organizations and worthy people. I just don't see us doing the same thing with televisions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
That completes testimony as far as I'm aware. Does anyone else wish to speak to the committee? Hearing none, I will close the hearing on Senate Bill 740. We are through for today.